The sea has always been the lifeline for India. Surrounded by the soothing blues from three sides, the world's largest peninsular nation houses a huge wealth of maritime culture handed down by generations. Our coastal people, across 7,500 kilometers of coastline, are proficient in every aspect of seafaring, and this has been true since the beginning of civilization. The salt of the sea runs in their veins. They are our original wave riders. There's enough evidence to suggest that ancient Indians were expert marine navigators. Indian scholars like Varaha Mihira from Ujjain and Aryabhata from present-day Kerala developed methods of computing a ship's position from the stars after accurately mapping the positions of celestial bodies. Expertise in navigation meant increased efficiency in overseas trade. The Indian Peninsula was cut off from the north by the mighty Himalayas and surrounded on the east and west by vast expanses of water. Hence, to trade her surplus goods, India had no option but to take to shipping. Archaeological research at sites like Mesopotamia, Bahrain, Egypt and Oman has led to the recovery of artifacts traceable to the Indus Valley civilization. At close to 5th century BC, there were no Europeans in the Arabian Sea. The Arabs and the Hindus competed openly. The idea of sovereignty over the high seas was unknown to the Asian conception. Indian products, particularly spices, were in high demand in overseas trade. This demand was led by the world-renowned Malabar pepper. Traders used to call it the black gold. To facilitate trade, both the western and the eastern coasts of India had numerous port cities. Muziris used to be a thriving port city of the eastern coast. Now known as Pattanam, excavations at this ancient urban settlement reveals evidence of a vibrant global maritime trade and cultural assimilation. It was continually occupied at least from the 2nd century BC to the 10th century AD. Incense, spices, textiles and precious stones from the western coast of India reached the Arab and Egyptian ports and from there on travelled deep inside Europe. This led to a high demand for Indian goods in the European empires. India became a much sought-after treasure island for the medieval Europeans. Ashoka, one of the most illustrious emperors from India's early history, had a far-reaching impact on this evolving maritime narrative. A keen follower of Buddhism, he wanted to share Buddha's message of peace across the planet. And for that, he used the existing maritime trade routes. Ashoka ended up becoming one of the biggest global emissaries of Buddhism, which at that time was largely confined to India. This evolving relationship of peaceful coexistence between countries was based on mutual trade interests, cultural exchanges and trust, and not by force of arms. Our systems of faith became our first global cultural ambassadors. Chinese literary texts refer to maritime activity between India and China as far back as the 7th century BCE. 6th century Chinese traveller Fa Hyunsung, who came to India in search of the Buddhist texts and visited Nalanda University, has also written of India's remarkable maritime abilities in his memoirs. Local legends claim that most dynasties in Southeast Asia were founded by rulers from the Indian Peninsula. According to Burmese chronicles, a prince of the Kapilavastu dynasty in Nepal sailed into Upper Burma and set himself up as king. The ruler who founded Ligur in the Malaya was thought to have been a descendant of Ashoka. According to Cambodian annals, an exiled prince of Indraprastha founded the kingdom of Cambodia. The histories of Java give a distinct account of numerous bodies of Hindus from Kalinga who landed on their island and established an era that still continues. Eventually, through this unique mix of trade and maritime travel over long periods of time, the countries of Southeast Asia comprehensively embraced Hinduism and Buddhism. Many sculptures found in the region show in splendid relief ships in full sail. They represent scenes recalling the history of Indian maritime exploits way back in time. Many of these family and local traditions have been washed away by the waves of time. Whatever remains is embedded in our cultural practices and are localized, as in the snake boats of Malabar. Back in time, it was boats like these that were utilized not just to export goods from India's east coast to different parts of the world, but were also used to protect the trade routes from pirates. Now they have evolved into cultural and festival icons, and that's probably the reason why they continue to exist. Some glimpses of this ancient past can still be spotted in dominantly maritime societies scattered among the coastal communities of India. Snake boat making and racing from Kerala remains one such living heritage. The precise measurements and detailed knowledge base of these craftsmen reveal a tradition running for centuries. They are the modern-day upholders of Indian expertise in cost-effective but top-quality shipbuilding, a skill set that has been recognized worldwide. India's lively shipbuilding heritage had numerous operational areas. While the snake boats represent a defense boat-making tradition, the art of dhow, or uru-making, stands for crafting large-scale boats used for trading and leisure travel. The seaside town of Beipur in Kerala still retains some of the traditional secrets of uru-making handed down by generations. The entire dhow is handcrafted from wood. Arguably, this is the world's largest living handicraft practice. Uru making is an undocumented craft. There's nothing on paper and no blueprint. From conception to completion, it is all in the mind of the master carpenter or maestri of a yard. Families of boat designers have been making these dhow boats in Beipur for more than 500 years now. The tradition itself is more than 1800 years old. India's expertise in warship building also extends to submarines, one of the most critical determining factors of modern naval warfare. Our technological acumen in the area is comparable to the best in the world. Be it in the area of nuclear-powered high-stealth capability submarines or the conventional diesel-electric ones. Today, the Indian Navy is forever keen to improve on its know-how and skills and to catch up with the world. But this was not always the case. Naval fights of any large scale were unknown in India before the arrival of the Portuguese. In the folklores of Kerala, the first European colonists are often referred to as the Portuguese pirates. They posed a threat to India's trading routes. The arrival of the 20-gun Portuguese frigate San Gabriel off the coast of Calicut in 1498 marked the beginning of the Vasco da Gama epoch for India. Local sea commanders of Kerala, particularly four generations of Murukkars, were naval experts who specialized in stealth attacks. They fought the Portuguese and resisted their advance. In 18th century India, Kanhoji Angre, a Maratha fleet admiral of repute, acquired an almost mythical status as a Maratha Navy chief. He was labelled a pirate by his European enemies because he fought against British, Dutch, and Portuguese naval interests. Numerous attempts to subdue him failed. Angre remained undefeated till his death. Despite the bravery of these heroes, the Europeans ultimately won over, thereby starting 4 centuries of authority-based control of the seas. Not just trade, the sea routes extending out of India were also used to take Indian indentured labour across the planet to other colonies. The huge Indian diaspora we see today travelled by the sea across the nation. At the Bombay shipyard, when the European supervisor died, one of the carpenters, Lovji Nusarwanji Wadia, was appointed master builder in his place. These Indian experts changed the European notions of shipbuilding by building sturdy vehicles at a much lower cost. Our master shipbuilders had a sturdy tradition to fall back on. The Vedas and our ancient epics have numerous references to sea travel. That would not have been possible without a firm knowledge of oceanography and the movements of the sea. About 159 huge ships of over 100 tons were built in Bombay between 1736 and 1821, including 15 of over 1,000 tons. Ships constructed in Bombay in its heyday were said to be vastly superior to anything built anywhere else in the world. India also had a tradition of building highly scientific maritime infrastructure that continues right up to the modern times. The Bombay Dry Dock, the first modern dry dock in Asia, was built by Lovji and his brother Sorabji in 1750. The English used the Bombay docks as a hub for ship maintenance. This was critical, as the massive trade vehicles connecting the Arab world with Europe and the Far East needed a body shop somewhere in between, and Bombay was just perfectly placed. Dry docks were a necessity for ancient mariners as well, and India didn't run short of ideas. Lothal, in present-day Gujarat, was probably the world's first tidal dock, at least the first that we know of. The Harappans built this natural dry port around 4,500 years back. Lothal Dock was located on the river Sabarmati, away from the main current, to avoid deposition of silt. The remains of the dock reveal that the Harappans were well aware of the principles of hydrology. The technology used here was highly advanced. India has continued to expand its reach in sea trade and expertise in seafaring well into the modern times. We are counted among the best in the world in terms of using the latest and the most advanced technologies and equipment. The shipbuilding and repair yards in Mumbai are carrying forward a tradition of excellence that started ages back with the shipbuilders from Surat. The Mumbai port stands testimony to various twists and turns of modern Indian maritime history. Even today, busy and well-managed ports like these ensure that sea trading still tops the export charts in India. By 2013, 95% of India's foreign trade by volume and 75% by value was conducted by sea. Also, more than 70% of our oil was imported by sea. All of this trade happens under the watchful eyes of our competent and confident Navy. The maritime defensive capability of our Navy gets supported by some of the best technologies available to the sector. Modern India's Navy has evolved out of a living tradition of thousands of years of maritime excellence. It reflects the Indian ethos, much like the India of yesteryears. It desires and promotes peace. It uses its expertise in rescue operations, mainly to save Indians marooned in crisis and conflict situations across the globe. It also involves itself in confidence-building measures like bilateral and multilateral naval exercises. The Indian Navy also has a critical role in tackling natural disasters. During the 2004 Indian Ocean tsunami, India sent out our warships loaded with relief materials, an act that was well appreciated around the world. India's maritime heritage today has evolved out of thousands of years of peaceful sea trade and the extensive seafaring experiences of our ancestors. For centuries, we have reached out to the world with a message of peace and freedom, and the world has come to us with the same expectations. The Indian way forward has always been to develop a spirit of partnership and collaboration. We still move ahead with the same purpose, riding the waves of mutual progress to become the true wave riders in time.